Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Welcome, everybody, to Aggressive Negotiations, a Star Wars podcast. We're just here to have a great time, talk about some Star Wars, and do it from a different point of view. And to help me do that, with me, as he is always, the one, the only, the Master, John Mills.
Why, thank you, Master Matthew. I'm over here relaxing in a nice hot tub full of midichlorians, ready to bring everybody a hot, fresh episode of Aggressive Negotiations.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that because we did the 602 Club episode, the Midichlorian Hot Tub, about...
Oh my gosh, yes. You're right.
Empire Strikes Back.
We were talking about that.
That's what Dagobah was. So that's really funny that that was somewhere in your brain still.
Yeah, it was hiding out somewhere in there, along with my midichlorian-based deodorant. Stronger than any other deodorant.
Hey, it lasts like 36 hours, not just 24. So it's awesome stuff. But we're not here to talk about deodorant or midichlorian hot tubs, even though if you don't have one yet, you really should get one. And that's our newest sponsor. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Yoda's Dagobah Hot Tubs.
I'm digging it, man. I see a business venture right there.
I'd love it. I could totally buy it. So one of the things that we have been doing has been having a lot of fun kind of walking through the idea of Star Wars Shocktober.
Yes.
And what could be better than Halloween Day we drop an episode about witches?
Yes. In specific, some very special witches. The witches of Dathomir.
One might say Sisters of the Night.
Ooh, I like that. Sisters of the Night. And, you know, truly an expression of, I mean, honestly, I'd say they definitely rank, just even though they've only been in animated form, they definitely rank as probably the creepiest creation to come out of Star Wars in a good long while. I mean, you get the thrill of the Emperor and the prequels and everything, but when the witches showed up on the scene, in the cartoon, I mean, we could turn the clock back and talk about the Witches of Dathomir all the way back in Courtship of Princess Leia.
But let's not.
That whole thing got destroyed when the Clone Wars came out, so there you go. It was even before Disney's destruction of the expanded universe. But yeah, man. I want to know. I know what my reaction was the first time I saw a Witches episode in the Clone Wars. What was yours? Take me through it.
The first episode that they show up in is Night Sisters, and, you know, we had obviously seen Asajj Ventress, but I don't really feel like before that we knew who she was and where she came from. Mm-hmm. And so knowing that she was related to the Witches of Dathomir was, I think, just a brilliant move on their part. And what I loved about that episode was the creep factor that was there. What I loved was this is the first time, I think, in all of Star Wars that we're getting to see a culture that was steeped in the dark side but wasn't the Sith. And to me, that was fascinating. And of course, I don't think we actually completely understand all of it really until we got Dark Disciple, where Asajj Ventress explains to Quinlan Vos about how, you know, to the Night Sisters, they know the dark side better than anyone. They grow up steeped in it, but they use it as a tool, but still stay themselves, unlike the Sith. And it's that balance that they have learned of the dark side, which to me, there was just something about the episode, the first episode, the Night Sisters, where some of that was kind of evident, but you could just tell there were so many layers. You just wanted to continue to get pulled back on these characters and this culture because it was completely different than anything we'd ever seen before surrounding the dark side.
My first reaction, I agree with you, was the creep factor. My biggest positive reaction, I think the reason I embraced the Night Sisters immediately, was that the design for Mother Talzin was one of the early rejected concepts for who the Sith apprentice was going to be in The Phantom Menace. And I'd always loved that design and had always, there was always a part of me that, you know, as much as I loved Maul, like would look at those old designs that, because one was a Sith witch who looked, I mean, it looked like she was just like the reanimated dead. And that was awful.
Yes.
Like, I remember reading in the Art of Episode One book, like Lucas had said, draw your worst nightmare. And McKeag drew that. And Lucas looked at it and said, draw your second worst nightmare.
Yeah.
And it was
because that nightmare was too real.
Yeah. But he then Mother Talzin, I think, was like an in-between stage before Maul. And given how they tied in Maul to the whole thing later, I thought that was also very cool. But to see the expression of the Sith witch that a part of me had always wanted to see in the prequels once I found out that she had been conceived, like that was what completely hooked me from the beginning. And the sound design for her, where you heard like the otherworldly voice talking underneath hers, that double voice, it was so perfect. And it, you know, honestly, if I'm going to watch something Star Wars related in, you know, a Halloween mindset, I'm going to a Night Sisters episode 100% of the time. And I know I'm sort of like rambling, but I really want to commend you for mentioning how they had a different culture. Because one of the things that I wrestled with, and I want to get your take on this too, as a fan, was as the universe got expanded in the Clone Wars, one of the things I constantly wrestled with was, well, there are only supposed to be two Sith and then there's the Jedi and who are these people in the middle? But I always felt that the Night Sisters addressed it by basically presenting a planet where their whole attitude about life was, don't mess with us and we won't mess with the galaxy. We're all good. And, you know, I mean, you know, yes, they contributed Maul to Sidious and all of those sorts of things. But they were basically happy just being on their little planet. And if you didn't cross them, you know, they're that type of really, truly insidious evil where you find it harder to condemn because they're not going out and actively trying to do what the Sith are doing and convert the whole galaxy to their way of life. They're just like, you know what? We're evil. Don't come to our planet. And it's like, okay, yeah, we're good. But I'm like, am I off the mark here? Did you get a similar sort of read?
No, I think what they really do for the Star Wars galaxy is they begin to open up this idea of the different and the vergences of Force peoples, you know, that the Jedi and the Sith are not the only people that exist here that have to do with the Force. And I feel like, especially in the Clone Wars, these are really the first characters that we get a taste of where, yeah, they're on the dark side, but the way that they view the Force is different than the Sith. And we'll slowly get that in the series, because right after this was the whole Mortis arc, where we talk about the dark and the light and the difference between and all of that. And we start to branch out. And this season was really interesting because we were really starting to expand the idea of the Force and what it was and how people used it, how people viewed it. And I think you're right on to something, that this was the first time that we kind of saw that. And the fact that, yeah, they weren't out in the galaxy trying to have any impact until they were double-crossed. You know, Mother Talzin is double-crossed by Sidious, who betrays her and takes her son, Darth Maul. And that's when she starts kind of loaning out the sisters' services as mercenaries in the galaxy. But before that, you know, she was willing to work with Sidious. You know, she was willing to be a part of that. And before that, the Night Sisters are, they, like you said, they are an insular group, and they didn't seem to go out and do other things. And no, so I think you're exactly right. They add so much dimension to the galaxy.
Now, what's interesting about them as well to me is I think that they're an expression of the type of Force user. I don't think that it is out of order to say, everybody knows you and I, we love the prequels, but I don't think it's out of order to say that one of the difficult things for fans to grapple with was the portrayal of the Jedi and the Sith in the prequels was not what people expected. And so there, I think that there's, on a subconscious level, an immediate rejection of it to say, eh, this isn't what I thought I was going to see. And I think that the Night Sisters in specific, they speak to sort of the magical galaxy that people had in their heads after being exposed to Yoda in Empire and Jedi, that the Jedi would have lived on their planets and there would have been, you know, peace because obvious, and the, you know, somebody like the Sith or the Night Sisters could have lived in their corner of the galaxy because obviously the Jedi know about the Night Sisters and never tried to wipe them out and were perfectly willing to just let them slide. So, you know, what is it about the Jedi philosophy that you think allows them, like the Sith want to take over the galaxy. So there's a natural reason to resist them in that aspect. But even if the Sith didn't try to bend the galaxy to their will, I think there's a very clear concept that the Jedi would want to wipe them out no matter what. Whereas the Night Sisters, you don't get that impression. You get the impression that the Jedi are okay with them being around. Because, I mean, do you agree with that? Do you, I see the Night Sisters as sort of like this reflection of the, you know, the Force users that everybody was expecting to see in the prequel era.
Just rewatching the first three episodes where they show up and Anakin Obi-Wan, you know, they're searching for Savage after the rampage that he's gone on. They go to Dathomir, end up talking to Mother Talzin, and, you know, they are able to sit down with her in that amazing set temple that they built there. Table. Mm. Just an incredible work.
I'm sorry to cut you off, but if ever there was a set piece in the Clone Wars that I wish could have been realized as like an actual set.
Yes.
Bingo, right there, man.
Yes.
So, no, sorry right to cut you off. You.
It's just fantastic. So, but that whole scene, you know, when Obi-Wan, when they're walking in, he says they're dangerous and they're not to be trifled with. But I think what the Night Sisters were able to do was to keep their involvement in the galaxy and any kind of part in any of this secret. You know, they really weren't out there trying to influence things as much. And I think that's what kept the Jedi from going in there to destroy them, because they really did keep to their own. And it's not the Jedi's business to go in and destroy something if they, you know, like you said, the Sith are trying to take over the galaxy. The Night Sisters seem to be pretty kumbaya most of the time staying there on Dathomir.
Okay, so here's a question. Do you think that the Night Sisters reveal, because I have no idea whether this has been blown apart or not, but I think the novelizations are still regarded as canon, yes? Even the prequel novelizations are, unless it's direct.
The prequel novelizations are where they mimic what was on screen. Anything else that was not on screen and written in the novelization can be overwritten.
Okay, so basically the history of the Sith as given in the episode one novelization by Terry Brooks, I should not consider as authoritative.
Probably not.
That's disappointing, because I was always under the impression that that was Lucas's own idea of where the Sith came from, because I was about to sort of hook on that maybe another advantage that the Night Sisters have is that there's no long rivalry, because the Sith, as I understand them, split are, you know, basically wayward Jedi, that they did the Dooku thing where they were like, no, we should be ruling. And, you know, big battle ensues, Darth Bane, Rule of Two, all of that stuff. We know that the Rule of Two existed, but, you know, I'm going with the novelization because I haven't seen anything that specifically contradicts this, where for anybody not familiar, there's a very brief bit in the novelization of episode one where it says the Sith were Jedi who decided they wanted to rule the galaxy, and what largely destroyed them wasn't the Jedi hunting them down, but infighting. And one of the sole survivor of the Jedi hunting them down and the Sith fighting themselves was a guy named Darth Bane. He instituted the Rule of Two. And so I'm thinking of it also from the perspective that the Night Sisters skate by because the Jedi have a specific beef with the Sith. The word Sith in and of itself, because it's a specific perversion of their order, you know, that like there's a gang grudge there that isn't going to be there for the Night Sisters. I don't know. That, I mean, that's what I'm going with mentally.
No, I think that there is a real part to that that makes a lot of sense. I also think that what's interesting is the way in which the Night Sisters, you know, they have a connection with the dark side, but there's also this connection with Dathomir and the magic Ikor that kind of flows in that planet, and they connect with that, and which allows them to be able to harness this power. And so there is a difference in the way in which they work. And we really saw that specifically in the Clone Wars series, the Unfinished Tales, where the Mother Talzin trying to steal force power from Queen Julia. The two episodes that we get with Mace Windu and Jar Jar Binks, of all people. And this idea that she is trying to steal the force from others to make her more powerful than Sidious. And so I think it's really interesting. Again, there is a real mystery there in the way in which the force and the magics all worked. And it's not all completely laid out. It still has a lot of mystery to it. And that's one of the things that I really like, that, you know, when we're talking about the idea of, I mean, they can create objects out of thin air, like the battle axe for Savage Opress. They can almost bring people back from the dead and make things like what they do with Darth Maul's legs. I mean, all this stuff, it just seems so wonderfully fantastical and creepy and scary. And yeah, it's wonderful because it feels so different than everything we know when it comes to the duality of Sith and Jedi.
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing is, you're talking about they create things out of thin air, and they're tied specifically to the planet. Like, Dathomir is basically like evil Dagobah, right? And
yes.
I mean, it really is. But then you have they eschew tools like the lightsaber and those sorts of things. And I think actually you've helped me sort of like coalesce here that another key difference between them and the Sith is the Sith, yeah, you know, they're using the Force in a utilitarian fashion, but they also have an embrace of technology. They're like with the Sith, the Force is a dark power to be used, but it's in conjunction with the material world. The Sith are obsessed with the material world, whereas the Witches of Dathomir are very much about the spiritual world, just, you know, the dark side expression of it. I think that that's actually, because, you know, if you really think about it, Palpatine lives on a city planet. He builds, I mean, the Death Stars are basically cities. The dark side users pervert planets and turn them into giant machines, you know, the Starkiller base. Whereas you have the witches who are basically communing with nature just in a different way. So that's, I mean, maybe that's another reason that the Jedi would not mess with them, is that they're sort of playing by the rules of the galaxy, that their power is going to ebb and flow in accordance with the natural world, which would tie right into the Jedi philosophy of, you know, all is as the Force wishes it to be. So if Dathomir is a place that's strong in the dark side, then that's what the Force wants.
Well, and it creates this idea too. I think you're right onto something, this idea, because we talk a lot about balance. And so there has to be some dark in the galaxy. There's going to be light. And so a group like the Dathomiri witches is that side of dark, but it's not trying to overtake the light, you know, because the Jedi's main purpose then is to keep the peace and to keep the almost the status quo of the balance between dark and light, whereas the Sith are trying to overturn that, and hence the battle between the two. And so, yeah, you get that thing where, you know, the Dathomiri witches, that's not their goal. Their goal is to live in their realm of the galaxy, on their planet, and pretty much be left alone. And, you know, they have some awful things they do. I mean, you know, one of the ways in which a young woman can become a Night Sister, they have to dive into this pool and fight this creature known as the Sleeper and bring a part of its body back. And once they do, they harvest that part of the body and they turn it into the Water of Life, which is a big part of the magics that we see. It's that green ooze.
Yes.
Exoplasm that's being poured into bowls that they use to, you know, help bring people back to life or anything like that. So, you know, they have a really creepy sense of what they do, and it is very perverted and dark. And yet at the same time, their goal is not to be out there conquering the galaxy and turning more people into either Night Sisters or just destroying them or ruling them.
Although they do act in their own self-interest, and that's why Maul, you know, like they reshape Maul after his death to exact revenge. They give Savage to Dooku as a way to try to help Asajj get vengeance against Dooku for his betrayal. You know, they're playing the long game. Now, here's an interesting thought that occurs to me is, you know, we're all obsessed with the idea that the Empire is a reflection of Nazi Germany. I would say that it also, intentionally or not, is very much a reflection of Soviets during the Cold War. But hey, but there is a, if we're going to go with the Empire as the Nazis, as Germany in the 1940s, who are the Night Sisters in the Axis of Evil? Are they Italy? They're not Japan, right? And now I'm thinking they got to be Italy. Or are they the Soviets, where they value their own culture? But the thing is, and they wall themselves off and they don't want anybody messing with their, you know, with them, and, you know, but they're very steeped in evil. But at the same time, yeah, that doesn't work if you're going to go with the analogy in a certain direction. That, you know, they'd have to be more reflective of the same philosophies of the Empire. So where would you place them in the Axis of Evil if we're going with the World War II allegories here?
Boy, that's tough.
Because
there really is a one for one. I feel like there's different parts of the different Axis leaders that you could put them into. But, you know, really, it's interesting because, for the most part, they've only been pulled into galactic events in the Clone Wars because they were betrayed. And
okay.
And so in that sense, I would say they're like the Soviets. You know, the Soviets were betrayed by Hitler, and so they are only pulled into World War II because he betrays them. He attacks them.
And they're not like trying to help the Jedi so much as screw
exactly
the Sith, because right, the Sith screwed with them.
And that's exactly what they end up doing, and that's what happens. And this is one of the things I think was so cool about that they didn't just let the stories die here. They really did complete the stories. They gave us those extra two episodes in the Clone Wars with Mace Windu and Jar Jar Binks, and then they created the Son of Dathomir comics, which are canon, the only Dark Horse comics that are canon, as well as, of course, Dark Disciple, to really tell more of the story here.
Yeah.
And the Son of Dathomir really gets into this because Mother Talzin and Maul combine and try to eliminate Sidious and Dooku, finally, because of everything they've done to them. And Maul ends up being able to flee. Talzin ends up dead in the confrontation because she sacrifices herself for Maul.
Maybe she's dead.
She could always come back. So in the end, the last thing we see of the Night Sisters is with Quinlan Vos joining forces with Asajj Ventress.
Yeah.
And so I think it is fascinating, like you were talking about, you know, they're really only pulled in because they got screwed over.
Okay, and just sort of, we've been making reference to the book Star Wars Dark Disciple by Christy Golden constantly through this. There are people who haven't read it who are, you know, quite possibly listening to this show. God bless you if you are, because goodness gracious, we go into some territory where I don't know how, you know, we go into territory with these sorts of books on our shows that I think Dark Disciple and reading the books like that are very key to understanding what they were trying to achieve overall. And I think that, you know, Matt and I highly recommend it if you have not read it yet. But there's one last question I want to throw out there to you. Is we talk about how the Night Sisters eschew technology, they're more tied in, but everybody they send out becomes a master with a lightsaber. Asajj Ventress, Savage, well, Savage isn't a master, but he'd probably beat me. So my question would be, do you see a situation where the Night Sisters could have won? Because the dark side is ascendant during the Clone Wars, obviously. Is there any way that the Night Sisters pull it off? If the Night Sisters beat the Sith, if Sidious gets defeated, what happens? Could the Night Sisters fill the void?
I don't think so. And the reason is just because I think Sidious had too much power in the dark side at that point. He had amassed too much power, and the plan had been laid for so long with what he was doing. And I think he had more resources at hand to be able to take care of the Night Sisters, which he does. I mean, you know, their planet is kind of overrun when the droids attack. He's able to have Dooku and himself actually go out and they take care of Towsen themselves when it becomes too powerful. So, you know, I think that's the secret weapon. You know, Sidious comes out of hiding in the Clone Wars when it's absolutely necessary. You know, we saw it in the Clone Wars when he takes care of Maul and brings him back down to the level he should be at. And then and what's great about the Son of Dathomir comics is you finally find out what it was that the desire that Sidious had for keeping him alive was to bring Mother Towsen out of hiding so that he could destroy her. So again, all of those things together, I think he just had too many resources at his fingertips. And, you know, like we said, the Night Sisters have spent so much time insular on their planet that they're ill-prepared to handle somebody with the amount of tactical knowledge and, again, just resources at his fingertips that he had.
So given now that we've backfilled story and we've brought in the Night Sisters and added all of these layers with Maul's origin and where he comes from and all of those sorts of things, let's play the hypothetical. Does an argument exist that if Sidious had not chosen Maul but had raised somebody else to be his Sith acolyte, somebody who didn't have any sort of extra philosophical bent or anybody else's meddling in his existence, would Sidious have been in a better position not to pull somebody from this farm team, but to go out and find a child the way that the Inquisitors go out and find the children during the Rebels series and stuff like that?
I think you have a good point there. And something that I was just thinking about as you were talking, that being part of, you know, the Night Sisters in some way, I think that that's one of the reasons maybe Darth Maul survives, because there's something about those magics along with the dark side that help him stay alive when he gets cut in half. I mean, because we've seen magics do super crazy things. So I think that really adds to that whole idea and makes it make a lot more sense. And I'm really glad that, of course, we get all this explanation with that, because when you put it all together, it doesn't seem so crazy. But the actual question about whether he might have been better served finding a, you know, somebody to teach and to be his apprentice that was not involved with, you know, the Night Sisters. I think that's a good question, although it could have also been a ploy of his to finally be able to destroy the Night Sisters and be supreme, so that by the time, you know, he becomes the Emperor, there is nobody to stand in his way. There are no Night Sisters. There are no Jedi. It's just him.
Yeah, although I will say it speaks to an interesting thought, whether it's intentional or not. You could make an argument that it reveals something about Sidious's character, that he is always looking to bend somebody of a different philosophy to his will, as opposed to raising somebody up who is pure of the Sith faith, as it were. Mm-hmm. Sidious, so far as we know, was Sith from day one, you know, but was Sith out of the gate. Whereas, you know, Maul is taken from this other culture and bent to his will. Dooku and, to a certain extent, Sifo Dyas are bent from the Jedi philosophy. Anakin, obviously, you know, is bent from the Jedi philosophy. So does it say something about Sidious's character that part of his drive was simply to twist people, not just control them? And does that tie in? And, you know, I'm not trying to open up any further arguments, but could you then take that thread and tie it into what we know so far about the Knights of Ren and Ben Solo falling to become Kylo Ren? Does that carry forward a theme that these dark side users who are trying to take over the galaxy are all about? And I mean, you know, honestly, they're trying to take over the galaxy. They're trying to bend the galaxy to their will. Maybe all of their relationships are about bending people and things to what they want, as opposed to, you know, just, you know, being steeped in the faith as the Night Sisters are.
That's a good question. And it'll be interesting, I mean, because that question brings into it, especially for the sequel trilogy, who the dark side users are and if they are adherents to the Sith at all or if they are just some different form of dark side user. So that really creates an interesting question. But I think with Palpatine and the idea of the Sith, I think they do like to make people bend to them. It makes them feel superior, you know, which is part of being a Sith. So right. I do see that as being part of it, of corrupting and bringing people over to their side, and that rush of power that what I believe in and who I am is better than what you are, and you will bow to my will, you know, kneel before the Palpatine instead of kneel before Zod, you know, right. Kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, okay. So, all right. So sort of a final thoughts question. With the Night Sisters arc, do you think if somebody is listening to our show right now and they have not gone through the Clone Wars, do you think that the Night Sisters work as a standalone, where if somebody is listening to this and they want to get in the Halloween spirit and they haven't tried Clone Wars or they didn't get very far into it, do you think that this is a series of episodes where they could just pick them up and plug them in and run with it? Or do you think they would be better served by just waiting for the stories to come up organically in the series?
I think you can do that. But having just watched the first episodes where they came out and where the Night Sisters are introduced, it helps if you know Asajj Ventress, because the storyline starts with her being demoted by Dooku and thrown and cast aside, basically, because Sidious says she's become too powerful, and so he has to get rid of her. And that's why she basically goes home to the Night Sisters. And I think that makes more sense, and it helps the storyline if you've been following her for two seasons already. When you get to that point of the third season and those episodes happen. Now, on the other side, I do think you can jump in and watch those episodes, and they are fascinating episodes and a lot of fun, but there are going to be a lot of things that, like anything that's part of a continuous story, you will miss out on. But, I mean, if you just enjoy something creepy and kind of scary and just off the wall in Star Wars, something that really, and this is what I love about this whole thing, pushing the boundaries, you know, of what Star Wars was, the Force, the ideas, the galaxy, everything. I think George and Dave were really having a great time doing that with this series. And it really shows in the episodes, any of the episodes that involve the Night Sisters or Asajj Ventress. And it's fantastic. So definitely recommend checking them out. And, you know, I mean, John, we actually talked about the Dark Disciple book twice on the 602 Club, because we talked about it together. We reviewed it And then we had Christy Golden on as an interview to talk about the book as well. That's how much we loved that book. So I think it says how much we enjoyed the Night Sisters, that arc, what they did in the Clone Wars. And so, I think it's incredibly awesome and so worth you checking out.
Well, we have our thoughts. We've given you our thoughts. If you out there in the audience, if you have thoughts about some of what we've talked about or something you think we missed when we're looking at the Night Sisters, you can reach out to us at thenerdparty.com/contact. Look for Aggressive Negotiations. Click on it. You'll send an email to us. We'll read it. We might even respond on air. You never know. So go on over there. And while you're there, check out our other shows on the Nerd Party Network. You have Filibuster. You have Nerd Nuptial. You have us, Aggressive Negotiations. And you have, coming soon in November, a whole bunch of surprises. So be sure to take a look over there. And while they're there, Matt, I think that they should go on over as well to lootcrate.com/nerdparty and check out that. What can they find over there?
Well, you know what's great? Is I feel like Loot Crate's just copying us, John, because they're talking about magical things as well in their box.
Now, see, that is what we call synergy, Matthew.
It is. It's like we planned it, John. But it's great because this month's box is all about magic. It's fantastic. I mean, what you've got coming up here in November, we've got Doctor Strange. We've got Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. There's so much great magic happening out there in pop culture. And this Loot Crate box can be yours if you go over to lootcrate.com/nerdparty, John, and they enter the code. And the code they should enter is...
Nerdparty. And there you go. You've got a wonderful discount that's given to you on your first subscription box. Or, you know, you sign up, you cancel at any time. It really is a great service. It really is tailored to geeks and their own desires. And the theme boxes are great. So go to lootcrate.com/nerdparty. Enter the code NERDPARTY and start your magical journey with them today. Huh? See what I did there? Magical? Magical?
I love it.
Yeah, there you
go. Well done, John. Well done. And John, you know what's great is that people want to contact us too. They can also catch up with us on Twitter. We've got the Jedi Masters, which is the official Twitter account here of Aggressive Negotiations. And then, of course, you can also tweet the network, the Nerd Party, at Join Nerd Party. So either one of those ways is fantastic to talk to us. And, of course, we're on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty. And that's where we post the shows that we do, all the shows of the network. Great nerd news coming out. So amazing places to catch up with us. But not only that, I know you're thinking, what else could there be? John, you're online as well. So if people want to talk to you or find you and what you're doing, where should they find you?
Oh, well, you can just look for Kessel Junkie. That's where I am. Sometimes you can reluctantly pull me into a little Twitter battle. But just if you promise me that I can take pot shots at Matt during it, because quite frankly, that's where I'm happiest. And also checking out nerdsandbeyond.com, which is a partner of the Nerd Party Network. I'll retweet articles from them every so often. It's a great nerd news source. And if you are enjoying listening to me for some bizarre reason, you can also hear me over on Stage 9 on the Trek FM network. And you can also hear me co-hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig. And the thing is, you might say, John, that's a lot of places to find you. But trust me, there are more places to find Matt. So, Matt, why don't you take them on their magical discovery journey where they can find you online?
Well, everybody hop on to the magic carpet ride, and I'll let you know where you can find me. You can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. I'm also on Instagram at MRushing. You can also find me on a little network called Trek FM. I do a few shows there. You can find me on The Orb with Chris Jones talking about Deep Space Nine, the Star Trek show. You can also find me doing literary treks with Bruce and Dan talking about the books and the comics of Star Trek, which is a lot of fun. And I do our general geek show, which is called the 602 Club, as we mentioned here. And you can find all sorts of great shows all over fandoms there, not just Star Wars, no Star Trek there, but everything else we love, from superheroes, TV shows, spy things. It's great. And we also have a special Star Wars feed there for only the Star Wars episodes, and that Star Wars A 602 Club Collection. And if you're looking for those specific episodes that John and I talked about tonight where we talked about Dark Disciple. We will include those in the show write-up, so make sure you check that out over at thenerdparty.com. So, John, I think there's only one thing left to say. It's time to close negotiations.
Matt, negotiations are closed. Spookily.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.